When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the second ever episode of Deadline Dilemmas with me. My name's Rich and I'm also here with Praz. This is the very final, well, it's only our second one, but it's the final one before the actual Deadline Dilemmas start next Thursday, which is literally going to be, I mean, it's less than 24 hours before the deadline when we do that next week. But how's your week gone, Praz?
Week's been great, actually. I was thinking that this week is exactly the proof of why this idea of doing pods on Thursday night works. Because look, we all podded on Monday. You did yours on Monday. I did mine on Tuesday. And then suddenly in a Wednesday game, what happens? Jesus is out and Nkunku has a niggle. And then we're sitting on a Thursday. Let's say the deadline was Friday. This is exactly the type of stuff that we need, like a 40-minute, where are we, what's happened, and what are we thinking about before the deadline. So I like that from that point of view. I did not like the fact that we lost two good options. Or potentially we lost two good options, which basically shrinks the pool and narrows down the template further.
Yeah, it's made, because 3-4-3, when we recorded last week, that was starting to become a little bit more popular. People were starting to look at that. And then I think we can now see how paper thin the options at striker were, because, you know, just losing one of them was bad enough. But losing two strikers, one who's never played in the Premier League before, suddenly 3-4-3, I don't think we're going to see many people going for that.
I mean, it's you need a Darwin Nunez hat trick in the last preseason game. And speaking of preseason games, I guess we should sort of tease out what we're planning to do today. So we're going to talk about the eight teams that are sort of most popular. And maybe we're being a little bit unfair to Brentford and Aston Villa, but it's the other eight. And we'll just talk about what have we seen in preseason so far so that people have a idea of where the squads are moving. In certain cases, their preseason games are finished, like Chelsea. In others, they have one or two games left. So again, what should we look out for in those things? And then in the end, hopefully we'll have time, we'll discuss implications of the big news of Jesus being out for a few weeks and potentially Nkunku also not being ready for game week one. So that'll be the agenda.
Yeah, sounds good. I mean, that the whole agenda was going to be just going through the preseason games, but obviously we have to try and squeeze that in. So I guess we'll get straight into it. So you've pulled these screenshots from Fantasy Football Scout, from an article. I mean, there's so much preseason content on there, but it breaks down a list of all the friendlies that we've had so far for the eight teams that you mentioned. So we'll start with the first one that's on the screen. We'll start with Tottenham. Now, they've had a lot less preseason games than the others. They had a game postponed in Bangkok for a waterlogged pitch. So they've actually only played two games so far.
Right.
And obviously there's all the speculation over Kane as well. So I didn't see many people with Spurs players in their team though.
Until Kane leaves, I think that won't change. And the fact that, I mean, they're a classic case of, like you said, two games. Everybody's played 45 minutes. Literally everyone's played 45 minutes. So we don't yet have an idea of who is in the thinking. I mean, you could have, you know, people are talking about Udogie as a good option at 4.5. We don't know because he's only played 45 minutes each and shared time with, you know, somebody else who's played in that role. Perisic has played 45 minutes each, even though it's been up top. But I guess the only one of interest, or the couple of interest, are Richarlison, if Kane leaves, and Son. Whether or not Kane leaves or not could be interesting for that price, right?
Yeah, well, because their fixtures do get really good from, I mean, the first game week's not good, but when you get to, like, I think game week five, that's a standout fixture. I mean, maybe people will even be looking at captaincy then, maybe not because of Haaland, but there's definitely, you know, some weight to looking at Spurs players for captaincy then. And like you say, with two games, it's an even smaller sample size than the rest of the players. I mean, I think last season we'd have got very excited with Perisic playing in the front three, like you alluded to, but
right.
I don't see him very regularly picked. I don't think he's really going to be one for my team either. So yeah, a lot of stuff does seem to pivot on what happens with Kane. Yeah. That seems to be the main one. I'm not really looking at any Spurs players. I mean, they got Shakhtar. They've still got a friendly left on August 6th, so that's Sunday, I believe. at home. So that'll be their third and final preseason game.
Correct, correct. I mean, things, I guess, for people who haven't followed it as much, obviously Postecoglou has come back with a four at the back formation, which is new for them. So you'd expect that, you know, they'd have a flat back four. They're looking for centre backs. At the moment, they're still running with Romero, Dier, Ben Davis, Sanchez. And so that's sort of not very interesting. But up front, I mean, I missed obviously Maddison. Now, what was interesting is obviously they play the 4-3-3, but there is a number 10 that sort of sits and, you know, you'd think that Maddison gets that position. But Lo Celso actually has come back from loan and he's looked very good. So the homework that we did was, you know, it could be that Lo Celso gets some games because he looks like a man who would fit this system of a number 10 really well. And so that's one to watch that, you know, either in the preseason or even until game week 5, as you mentioned. That what is that role of that number 10? Because there could be a lot of points in that position for some cheap FPL value.
Yeah, I mean, we had to pick, you know, for Scout, our flops of the season. And I found it really hard to pick one. And I must admit, I did say Maddison. Then I was reading the match reports and he had 6 shots in one of the games. So it's kind of one of those things I'd love if we had underlying data, even though it's a small sample. Because my assumption is, and I don't know if I'm right, would be that, you know, lots of low XG chances. That's how I picture Maddison.
Right.
But still, six chances is interesting. So I think mm-hmm. we're just going to be monitoring them, see what happens with Kane. I heard Son was playing quite wide.
You know, we can't sort of take these things on face value. But yeah, a lot of people were saying Son has played wide. I mean, he's got, I think, no returns, right, in preseason. But again, we are discussing preseason more in the sense of what have we learned on formation and new things. But, you know, a player not scoring returns doesn't matter.
Yeah. And I mean, the only standout, you know, for FPL points, as it were, was Richarlison got a hat trick in 45 minutes. But I mean, we've said small sample and I don't know much about the team they were playing, Lion City Sailors. So, yeah, should we move on to Liverpool?
Let's do that.
Yeah, I think this is the interesting one because I think, especially, I mean, it happens. Darwin was benched before the Jesus injury. But I think if it was the other way around, Darwin would have become a player that was very, very popular. Obviously, they've still got another preseason game to go. We're going to talk more about Jesus replacements later. I'm actually very tempted by Darwin. There's an account on Twitter called Premier League Panel. I do find some of the technical breakdowns he does, you know, interesting. I've disagreed with some stuff he said about, you know, England and Southgate. Obviously, I would. But
that's the channel that predicted the Pep formation, right? The 3-2-4-1.
Yes, that's the one. Yeah, and he seems to think this nine position at Liverpool is almost the way they're going to be playing is tailor made for Darwin, like with runs in behind. Obviously, it depends which formation they play. I like to believe that because I'd love to have Darwin in my team. I don't know if he's one you're considering.
Yeah, so look, I mean, again, the thing you mentioned on the Scouts website. So yeah, you can basically check the minutes. And so what worried me, and this is completely random, maybe it's completely, you know, superficial, but the trend so far in the first 3 friendlies were 45 minutes each half, every player gets some minutes. The last friendly against Bayern Munich, some players started to get more than 45 minutes. And so that felt like these are the guys who are preparing for game week 1. And the people who got more than 45 minutes, as you'd expect, Salah, Van Dijk, you'd expect Robertson, Alisson. But then Trent and Robertson, obviously. But then you had this section of players that are still being tested. So in that category, obviously, Luis Diaz got 45 minutes. Darwin Nunes got 45 minutes in the second half. Gakpo got 61 minutes. So it just puts in, or where is Jota? Jota got 45 minutes as well. It just puts in my head the point, and Konate and Matip also, by the way, 45, that these are the guys who he's not sure about. And these are the guys who will be continue to rotate and continue to sort of be part of the periphery of the team in the top 13, 14 players, but not in the top 11. And that's the risk with Darwin Nunes. But, you know, you could spin it two ways where you can say, he's fine even if he gets 30 minutes because now you'll have 10 minutes added on after the 90th yep. minute anyway. So he's getting 40 minutes. Or you could just say that, you know, it's not worth the hassle. You've got Ollie Watkins who's on penalties. Nkunku will be fit at some point. And so you could have the counter argument as well. So I completely see it. I do think Darwin has good potential.
It's a good point because when you were saying that, actually, it did get me thinking about the times Darwin started last season. He was still prone, you know, to being subbed off early. He's not, you know, he's not Salah. He's not, you know, a 90 or 100 minute man. as it were. So yeah, there's definitely some risk there, but there seems to be risk with all the Liverpool attackers unless you stump up that cash and go for Salah, and that seems to be becoming less and less popular now.
Correct. And look, in terms of formation, so before we do a little bit of a Salah, where are you with it? I think, again, in terms of what we've seen, a lot, there was some fears on Trent playing number six. I think you guys covered it really well, Seb, especially on in terms of, you know, how Trent has been moving as a number six. But in the latest game, it was Curtis Jones who actually played 75 minutes on the six. But then in terms of Trent, he was inverting, but nothing that you'd say was the old Trent, right? I mean, you can argue whether the inverting is a good thing or not, but he was inverting. So if that's what floats people's boat in terms of Trent being good, then he was doing that. And then in terms of central midfield, like I said, I think they haven't yet had a game where McAllister and Szoboszlai have got a lot of minutes. I think McAllister got 45, as I mentioned, Szoboszlai played 75, and Curtis Jones. And they will look to find transfer in a number six at some point, and Lavia has been mentioned. But that's really it in terms of formation. I think it's there to stay, right? This inverted setup and getting a number six.
Yeah, this is the annoying thing. There seems to be a lot of teams where we're not that set on who's going to start, especially the bigger teams. It seems like a lot of teams are in some kind of transitional phase. Probably Liverpool less than others. But it just seems to be because Gakpo was added, you know, last season. We've now got Darwin, who he's been... I don't want to fall for the being given the squad number. You know, he was given number 9 because Cancelo was given the squad number last year, wasn't he? And then he ended up, you know, going out on loan. So, yeah, Liverpool, are you quite set, though, on no Trent, no Salah?
Pretty set.
I'm going that. You said it quite early as well. I remember listening to you on the wire.
My first draft was no Trent, but at the time I had no Gabriel either. And of course, in this video, we're going to talk about the implications of no Jesus. And the number one implication for me is that everybody will have an Arsenal defender, or many people will have an Arsenal defender, because the triple attack is now off the table.
Yeah, so it does push us into the same kind of draft.
Correct, because now if everybody has a Gabriel, pretty much most people have an Estupiñán, that's one position left. Or if you wanted to go maybe one sub, you know, you could go to Chilwell, you could go a Stone. So I don't really see a slot for Trent at the premium that you'll have to pay for him. If the fixtures were easy, I think people would make that sacrifice. So I think it's just pushing one more reason for people to say, maybe let's just go for this really sexy midfield and, you know, save a little bit in our defense. And then we'll see if Trent looks good. Then after game week 8, you wildcard when Liverpool's fixtures turn as well.
It's funny because the first few drafts I did, it was easy for me to have either Salah or Trent. But then as I've got used to the more, you know, the template team without them, it's actually, I find it impossible to find the money without severely weakening my bench. And obviously my first 11.
That's the thing. Once you spend the money, it's hard to sort of collect it back. And that's what happens in our drafts as well. I mean, if Trent absolutely smashes, let's say he gets 2 goals and assist and 2 clean sheets in the first 3 games, I think a lot of us will start panicking. And it's just very hard to go back. But, you know, you have to sort of make your bet that you have gone a certain way. I think the pain will also be a lot easier, both with Salah and Trent, because they'll be lowly owned. I think the ownership should be 20-ish%. So I guess it's fine, because you'll think that, you know, I did miss out on these Salah or Trent points, but instead I've got a Bruno or I've got a Martinelli, and, you know, in my cheap defense, I can get a Stones or an Estupiñán or someone else who can match somehow as a combination. I guess that's the thinking.
Yeah, and I suppose in previous seasons, the pain might have been doubled. Say you didn't have Trent and he did really well, I'll assume they kept a clean sheet, and people would have Robertson, Alisson, Van Dijk. I don't think anyone's going to have those players.
No.
I almost feel like the Liverpool clean sheet potential is just going to be what Trent is, or the ownership is just going to be what Trent is.
Exactly. I heard you on the Scoutcast, we're talking about Robertson.
Yes.
I'm like, no chance.
I've been talked out of it subsequently, yeah. But yeah, I'd love your thought on it, though. Is it because the defence is bad?
I think it's a bad defense, and his pricing, if he was 5.5, basically for me, he's equivalent to the other guys, Stones, Shaw, Chilwell, James, because average defense, or it's a little bit better defense and equal attacking potential as maybe a James or a Chilwell. I'm being generous to Robertson, because I think he has slightly reduced in terms of his attacking threat. Now, he did take a corner, which was on Trent's side. This is another preseason nugget where Trent usually takes all the corners on the right-hand side, but the assist to Van Dijk was a corner that Robertson took from that side. And I think it was Szoboszlai or McAllister who took the corner from the other side, or maybe Szoboszlai. So there was a little bit hint of confirmation bias that maybe Trent is off some set pieces, not all of them. But yeah, on Robertson, I'm completely off. I mean, for 6.5, I'm getting Trippier if I had that money.
Yeah, I've gone off. I mean, I had thought of it on the fly, and part of it was to move to Trippier because they're the same price. Yeah. And it was just looking, because we've obviously got much limited data in preseason, like I already mentioned. So just looking at heat maps, Robertson was getting touches in the box. I mean, not many. I think it was like 5 or 6 over 3 or 4 games. And Trent had no touches in the box. But obviously, that's not really unusual for Trent. And that's not what gives him, you know, such great value. So, correct. Yeah.
The inverted guys all don't really have touches in the box. I think Zoff was talking about this on the wire as well. Like Stones has almost zero touches in the box. But that's fine because they're on the periphery. So they might take the odd shot. They'll be good for a little mini cross to the central striker for an assist. So I think it's still fine. This is why penalty area touches are a bit rubbish anyway.
Yeah.
It's about XA.
And that's why preseason games are tough, because you haven't got the more advanced data. You have to really break it down a bit, you know, a little bit more. But talking about Trippier has segued us quite nicely into the Newcastle games. Now, Newcastle, they've played 5 games already, and they've still got 2 more to go. I'm assuming because it's the 5th and 6th, they're going to play like an A team and a B team, or a combination of players, and they're both at St James's Park. But I mean, there's been one player to talk about for Newcastle in this preseason, hasn't there? With Anderson.
Right. I mean, I don't know to what extent we can rely on that 4.5 nugget. I mean, personally, I'm going to talk about other 4.5 options, because you need your 4.5 option is a guy who you need on a rainy day. And if your 4.5 option is going to be one where you're tempted to play him, you're going to be frustrated when they play and you've subbed them. And that's not really what I particularly want from my 4.5. I'm a Nakamba guy any day. If you were to go for 4 in midfield, although again, speaking of what's now happened with Jesus' injury, another major implication of that will be that most teams will switch to 5 in midfield.
Yeah, I agree with you on the 4.5s. It's like your 2-point insurance, isn't it? And most seasons, your 4.5 is more like the Harrison Reed or Nakamba, who you mentioned. I mean, Harrison Reed from the pricing last year. More than like Andreas we got last year, who was a bit of a gift. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So no, I do agree with that. But it's just funny how he scored 7 goals when he's never scored for Newcastle before this pre-season tour.
Exactly.
Has there been much else to talk about with Newcastle? There's not been, you know, if you're following like form, inverted commas, there's not been really many goals from other players. I mean, St. Maximan's left, for example, but no one was going for him anyway.
Yeah, I think a couple of things that I wanted to discuss. So Anthony Gordon has started to see a little bit more minutes. So he played 45 and then 90 minutes against Chelsea. And then he actually didn't show up against Brighton a couple of days later. So maybe he's somebody who could get more minutes. Not that I'm saying from an FPL point of view, because they've also signed my favorite Harvey Barnes. So he could be another one that is a good shout for the left. Obviously, that has implications on Isak and Wilson, or Isak not playing much on the left. So he will share minutes with Wilson up top. So therefore, I think in terms of Newcastle attack, we're pretty much out. In terms of Newcastle defense, given the fixtures, I would say we're pretty much out, unless you're talking about Botman. There could be some Trippier aficionados that start with him, and nothing wrong with it. I mean, we've seen in the projections that, you know, Trippier after game week 4 is a complete beast, because Newcastle's fixtures change a lot. So apart from that, I think one last point I wanted to make on Newcastle is Livramento. They've just signed, or they're expected to sign, from Southampton. He plays on the right. So does that mean that Trippier gets the odd rest, or Trippier plays on the left like he does for England and Livramento plays on the right? Because they have been looking for a left back, but they've ended up signing Livramento. So you could see a bit of that where Trippier plays on the left. Now, whether that changes anything or not, but the main style of Trippier is run on the channel, cross the ball. Basically like a traditional David Beckham, right? You know, just keep crossing the ball. That's how he accumulates all these bonus and XA. And so will that change if he's on the wrong foot on the left? He'll have to sort of switch and then cross, maybe. So I think it's a little bit of a question mark on Trippier.
The bonus points is a really good point, because he was such a large part of the value that he had, that he was an absolute monster for BPS. So yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I guess it tells you to avoid Dan Burn as well.
Definitely.
Yeah, because I guess Botman is the standout. I had a thought about Newcastle. It's not about the preseason games, though. It's just, I was thinking back to, you know, they've got more, you touched on it earlier, there's more going to be more injury time. And I know in the Women's World Cup, for example, they've had, you know, 3 or 4 minutes in the first half, maybe up to 10 minutes in the second half. So the games are going to be longer. I think that's when Newcastle played Arsenal and they did waste, you know, quite a lot of time. I wonder if teams like Newcastle could be, because they were a defensive powerhouse last season. I think for XGC, they were only behind Man City. I wonder if that's going to have an impact. I mean, I know it's only, you know, a few minutes more. I know a few times last season they went, you know, heavily up. They went 4 or 5 nil up and subbed many of their defenders off. Trippier benefited from that for a few times. It just makes me wonder if Newcastle could be penalised more for it, or if I'm just seeing it through, you know, I'm just remembering one game.
The Arsenal game, right?
It was the Arsenal game, yeah. Because I remember they said the ball was in play and it was a really low number of minutes. I mean, I think it was almost 50 minutes or something. I hope I'm not exaggerating. I apologise, Newcastle fans, if I am, but it was low.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. It could be the case, but it could also be the case that the idea of these stoppage time penalties is that players or teams just learn not to do it. So it could be that the side effect could be that, you know, they just don't do it anymore. The goalkeepers actually don't fall down every time they catch an easy ball across, or, you know, the players don't feign an injury more than they need to. The subs run off quicker. Maybe that's basically what they want to aspire to. So I'm a little bit skeptical in terms of how big of an impact this will be. You know, like what a big deal we made out of 5 subs. We were doing complete analysis on how many managers sub off at what times. Ultimately, it just means some players get subbed on a little bit more. But if managers want to give complete rest, then they give complete rest. 5 subs or 3 subs.
That's true. Maybe it's just me justifying to myself not having any Newcastle when, you know, last season you felt exposed, even if you only had 2 at some point. Yeah. I mean, you had to have 2 at an absolute minimum.
I mean, I'm looking at Cher actually after game week 4. I mean, if I can't get to Trippier, I think Cher's numbers were absolutely amazing. Yep. I know we're getting out of preseason, but I think Cher will be again amazing, and he's nailed, and you know, that defense is good. So we need to have some piece of that pie.
Yeah, and he was right up there with Gabriel last season for XG. I think the problem with Cher, his price at the start of the season rose so quickly when Botman's didn't. Botman's actually dropped.
He dropped 4.4, yeah.
So it actually became quite a tough decision to go Cher over Botman, despite the difference in XG. But yeah, so that's Newcastle. On to probably one of the most interesting teams of this preseason, because, you know, they're hopefully going to look completely different, and that's Chelsea. So they've played five games this season, or preseason, shall I say. And the big news was, well, there was 2 big news, weren't there? There was James and Chilwell played together.
Yeah.
And then Nkunku has got a knock. I don't know if there's been an update on how long he's going to be out for. I think they said that it would take a few days to assess it. Last I saw, anyway.
Yeah, that's what I saw as well. I think in terms of preseason, so a few things. Again, Seb covered it really well in Scoutcast. But in terms of preseason, what we've learned is they're, you know, flat back 4 again, and instead of the 5 at the back that they're more used to. But then James and Chilwell are still very, very attacking. Pochettino, the way he plays, fullbacks are a big part of the attack. So all of that still works in terms of the fullbacks being attacking. Nkunku has played in various positions. He's played as the lone striker. He's played as a support striker, which we think will be his regular position. He's also played on the left. So what that tells me is Nkunku will pretty much be a mainstay when fit. Jackson has looked very impressive. A lot of Chelsea fans say he's been the most impressive in preseason. So Jackson basically, you know, he played 45, 28, 45 minutes, 45 minutes. And in the last game against Dortmund, he played 82 minutes. That shows that, you know, they're getting him up to speed to start. So you can say with fair certainty that Jackson will be their striker, especially with the Nkunku news that he will be starting game week 1 against Liverpool. Question mark whether he's the mainstay striker going forward after 5-6 game weeks, because you want that Chelsea striker for until game week 8, till when they have the really, really good fixtures. And then obviously we don't know who's on penalties, because they unfortunately got no penalties in this period. And we're all desperately hoping and praying that it's Nkunku if we have him in our team, or it could be James, or it could be someone else. So I guess that's where we are. Sterling disappointed a little bit. I mean, you're a Sterling fan. What did you think of his preseason?
Yeah, I mean, I should say I've only watched highlights of the game, and I am a big Sterling fan, but he does get, fans get on his back, whether it's England fans, Chelsea fans, Man City fans, even Man City fans did it, because he's a very frustrating player to watch, the way he plays, because he can lose the ball a lot. And I guess he just looks a bit different the way he runs and stuff. I don't know if that has a psychological impact on fans, but yeah, I'm worried about his minutes. I wouldn't be worried about him, you know, if he actually played and I knew he was going to get 80 minutes per game, for example, I'd actually definitely go there, but we don't know. I mean, Chelsea could still sign more players as well. You know, Poch has come out and there's comments suggesting they could still bring in new players. So that's something to watch, I guess, for Jackson and for Sterling as well. So, yeah, I don't think I'm going to go with any of the attackers to start with. I think I want to see a little bit more. The defenders I'm very interested in. It was interesting just looking at the SofaScore heat maps. You can see that Chilwell was a lot more attacking. I mean, James was still attacking, but
yeah.
Chilwell seems to be well advanced. Obviously, it's only in this one game. But there has been talk of, you know, Poch liking to attack more. I think we talked about it a bit last week, didn't we, about Poch liking to attack more with one wing back or one fullback. But
I think it
could change as well, couldn't it? I mean, if they both play together, maybe, because James's instincts are not going to be to sit back all the time. You know, he's not.
It could depend on which defender they face as well. If, you know, if it's a Wan-Bissaka on one side and although Luke Shaw is a good defender, so let's say he's injured, Malassi on the other side as an example, then clearly they will say, okay, James is the one that attacks and Chilwell sits back, or maybe they even play Cucurella. So I don't think it's set in stone, like you said, that we can just assume Chilwell will be more attacking than James. I think we're sort of spinning a narrative because of Chilwell being reasonably injury-free, James still coming back. He got this little scare because he traveled late to the US. So that just spooked all the managers that this is what James can do. It can happen any game week. So I think there's a lot of us sort of telling ourselves that Chilwell is a better asset, but I think both are great. And I think there's no reason to say, I certainly think if I have the opportunity and I have the transfers, I do not rule out a Chilwell and James double up in game week 3 or 4, right? And I think I heard you say that as well.
Yeah, I think at the moment, that's the way I'm leaning. Especially, if, I mean, Chelsea aren't going to have midweek games this year. And there is a risk with both of them, but I want to get the right one. I don't know which the right one is. They have good fixtures. They're both good FPL assets. It's kind of like, just why not both?
Yeah.
So you could. Yeah, it's just a shame they haven't. Well, maybe it's not a shame, but there's no more preseason games for Chelsea. That was there.
I actually noted that. It's really strange. Yeah. I mean, I think they have a closed doors friendly that they're planning, but we are not going to see much. And I wanted to see one more game with James and Chilwell just to sort of see, is it really true or was it one game? I know one extra game is not going to completely make up our minds, but it helps, right? One more sample to see the James and Chilwell dynamics, one more sample to see Jackson, one more sample to maybe get a penalty and then see who takes that penalty. So, but we're not going to get that. So it is what it is. And with Chelsea, I just wanted to say one other thing. I think if people overcommit on Chelsea, just keep in mind that you are also committing more and more to a game week 9 wildcard. Now, I talked about this in a wildcard window on The Wire, where Chelsea's fixtures until game week 8 are actually excellent. I mean, easily the best until game week 8. But after game week 8, they play Arsenal, Spurs and Man City in the next 4. And in fact, Brentford as the 4th. So the run really does toughen up. And so there'll be other assets. You could obviously go jump through transfers, but it does push you a little bit more towards game week 9 wildcard.
Yeah. I mean, they're a lot cheaper than someone like Trent, for example. So, I mean, I think if I do that, it would almost be one of them would be my 4th defender. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to play, you know, 4 at the back or 5 at the back. Could just be, you know, looking at those rotations. But yeah, sometimes when you can't decide between them, gamble and go for both. Maybe that's awful advice.
No. But, yeah. I think we're deprived of attacking fullbacks this year or wing. I mean, is anyone playing 5 at the back that is worth looking at?
I don't think so.
None of the teams are thinking. So the, you know, the whole wing back 5 at the back is dead, at least in these big teams. And so we are deprived of good attacking fullbacks because either they're inverting, like in Arsenal's and Man City's case. So it's basically looking at Luke Shaw, Estupiñán, James, Chilwell, a Trippier. These are the guys, and that's why they're at the top of our mind for defense.
Yeah, honestly, the Wire episode you did, I know it's 2 hours long, so I'd highly recommend that for defenders because you covered literally everything. But we'll move on to the next one. So that's going to be Brighton. Talked about them a little bit on the Scoutcast just because the forwards, I mean, Ferguson actually came out and said 3 forwards, we're going to be rotating. Matoma and March, we assume, are nailed. Estupinan, everyone owns. Still, I mean, he's probably going to start the season, but is he going to, you know, if you're going to go for 10, 15 game weeks with one goalie, how confident would you be he's going to still be playing in, you know, game week 11 or 12, for example? What are you thinking about Brighton? Because they're obviously a brilliant team. De Zerbi's incredible. The fixtures are good, then they're bad.
That's the problem. And look, I think I was a little bit... we don't know the penalty taker, right? I mean, we think it'll be Gross, but now we don't have a nailed attacking player that'll take penalties, which, you know, McAllister was a good example, or other teams, you know. Obviously, when we talk about Brighton, we have to talk about Brentford because Mbeumo is in the same bracket. We have to talk about Crystal Palace. Eze is in the same bracket. And those two guys are on penalties. So that sort of dents the appeal of March and Mitoma, and the fact that their fixtures really, really turn. I think I've talked about this quite a bit in terms of what happens after the first three game weeks. They go on a run of basically playing Newcastle, Man United, Aston Villa, Liverpool, Man City. And there's Bournemouth in the middle as well, which is obviously good. But so you really need to have an exit plan, I think, for Brighton, unless you can hide that player as a first sub, like Estupinan, maybe you can in some games. So look, I think Brighton are still an amazingly attacking team, but they are now preparing for life where they will play in Europe. So they have got almost a B team in attack, where every player is at the risk of an odd missing of a game or an early sub. We just have to live with that. And so their X minutes will come down substantially. Whether they're good assets, even with those reduced X minutes, is another question. And I think at the moment, I'm on the fence.
Yeah, they're a tough one. They're a tough one to decide on. And you mentioned Gross is on, we assume he'd be on penalties, but then in the preseason friendlies, he's been playing at right back occasionally as well. So that's a bit of a downside when you've got, you know, a midfielder playing at right back. As good as penalties are, he's not McAllister.
Exactly. And the other thing about goalkeepers you mentioned, I think, again, I mentioned on the wire pod that I like Steele the most in 4.5s, only because high possession team, their XGC is the best out of the other 4.5s that we're looking at. Maybe Crystal Palace is similar. But the problem is Steele played one game 90 minutes, the Brentford one, and then Verbruggen played 90 minutes against Newcastle. So even though we're getting a hint that Steele is looking good, he even got the assist in that game against Newcastle. Against Brentford, we just don't know unless De Zerbi comes and says that Steele is going to be my number one. And let's say even he says that, one mistake and then Verbruggen comes back, because they've signed him. I mean, it's not like a Sanchez situation where Steele has basically taken over the position and that's made his own. Now he's basically genuinely competing for the position with Verbruggen, so that makes me a little bit more skeptical, which maybe makes him not as appealing on the 4.5 bracket. As I said, until and unless De Zerbi says he's number one.
I've never known so much doubt about goalkeepers in pre-season, because we didn't even mention under Chelsea that Sanchez is on his way to Chelsea as well, just to put that little bit of doubt over. He's not 4.5 million, but put that little bit of doubt over Kepa, for example.
Sanchez is 4.5, so that could be also interesting.
Yeah, that could become, well, what Kepa became last year, like an underpriced goalkeeper for a good team. Yeah, I've never known such upheaval with goalkeepers, and it feels like the only really established Premier League goalkeepers. I mean, Pickford, they've got good fixtures. I mean, I know we're not talking about Everton, but he's an established goalkeeper. He's not going to get dropped anytime soon. But
yeah,
I've swayed away from Brighton. We better move through these swiftly. So we're onto Man City now, who've had three pre-season games. Probably been paying a bit more attention to these than some of the other games, looking at, you know, where Foden's playing, etc. Not that I actually care where Foden's playing. As funny as it sounds, whether he's playing in the eight role or if he's playing, you know, on the right or on the left, I just want to see Foden getting minutes personally. Right. De Bruyne hasn't had any preseason minutes yet at all.
Has he not even a minute?
I don't even think he's had a minute.
You're right, actually. Yeah, I don't know why I thought, because he's been on the bench, I keep thinking that he's getting some minutes. You're right, he's not had a single minute.
Hasn't actually come on. So, I mean, they've got the Community Shield, haven't they, at the weekend. Yeah. So maybe he'll get a run out then. And obviously with Mahrez actually leaving as well, what would your prediction be for Foden's minutes? I know we haven't got a two-hour slot to discuss it, but...
Well, the thing is now Bernardo Silva looks to be staying, at least from whatever we're reading. And he's got decent minutes. He's played 30, then 71 against Bayern Munich, 54 against Atletico Madrid. So he's the third highest, in fact, in terms of number of minutes in preseason. So as long as Bernardo Silva is there, he could play with De Bruyne in the middle. He could play on the right. So that's one position that's always going to be tricky. And, you know, Palmer played a little bit on the right. Look, I think Foden, I like him and I would have him in my team, but I would like it even more if he plays the Gundogan role, because that just means that it cements his position a little bit more. Unfortunately for him, Grealish has made the left position his own. So yeah, he's not playing much on the left unless Grealish needs a break, because Pep absolutely loves him. With the inverted thing, this is what we were discussing, basically, with the inverted Stones role, you cannot give the ball away. So you need your wingers to not only hold width, but also control possession there. And that's why Liverpool are a little bit of a team that will keep conceding chances, even if they invert, because Trent is out of position, Salah is trying to dribble, loses the ball, and then they're suspect at the back. Pep doesn't like that. Grealish is amazing at basically keeping the ball. Bernardo Silva is amazing at keeping the ball. So if Foden does a good job, I think he'll get minutes, and then I'm very interested. And so I think he will in the Community Shield, and that's going to be the game where we'll get a better understanding of the first 11. It could be a punt slot.
It's a good point you make, actually, the position, because I hadn't thought about how the position he plays in could then affect the minutes. I just had in my head, I just want him playing no matter what. But I guess you're actually giving a reason, you know, why him playing in that position would be good.
If he's only on the right, I like him a little bit less. I mean, look at Grealish again, right? He was great as a player, but not great as an FPL pick. A lot of people went there end of the season. He's good on XA. I mean, he will create the chance. But if you're paying 8 million, or last season, I think it was 7.5 or something. This year, they're 7.5 again or 7. You need goals. You need goals from midfielders. And there's so many other midfielders who will get goals. You know, the Arsenal boys, the Man United boys. You don't have to go for an assist machine. You can actually go for a goal machine in the pricing that we have. So I want goals from Foden, and I think he'll get more if he's playing centrally.
Yeah, I agree on Grealish. He did feel a bit more like the old school coverage. I mean, I know he was nailed in an attacking position. And I guess within the City team, if you're going to get an assist every game, that could only be 5 or 6 points. So, I mean, while that's pretty good, I don't think it's the explosiveness you're thinking he's going to do. But yeah, so that's City. We'll move on because we...
Just on City to complete. So Kovacic has played 45, and then the last one, he only played 36. So a lot of people think Kovacic is just going to walk into the team and take, Gundogan's position. I'm skeptical because Pep has a record of, you know, taking time with new signings, even if they're from the Premier League. I mean, look at Grealish, for example, in his first season, and there are many, many examples. So
Cancelo as well.
Kovacic could take some time, and therefore that's the reason why people are interested in attack. And then your favorite boy, I had to mention him, Rico Lewis. Apparently he's going to play in midfield a little bit more, right?
Yeah, I did see that. There was a tweet the other day. I can't remember the source, but it did look quite legit. It was a slightly reputable account anyway. They were suggesting he could be playing more in midfield, more in attacking role. And purely because I owned him because he was cheap, but I was watching him closely in like the Leeds game, etc. We talked about him a bit last week, but yeah, he's so attacking. And actually, if you look at the Man City players for last season and sort them by XGI, or I think it was XGI, he was top of all City defenders. Again, a small sample, but if we get a team leak that Rico Lewis is playing against Burnley, I'm going to struggle not to do it as my fifth midfielder.
I'm going to recommend you not to do it.
I know.
You want your City players for longer, not just... But yeah, I guess it's fine if it's really short term and he can just hide on your bench after that.
Otherwise, the alternative's Edison. But again, we won't get into Edison yet. We'll save that for next week.
There's some very, very early rumours on Stones having some hamstring issues. So watch out for that. I mean, it's only on City fan forum, so nothing to alert anyone. But just look out for that. Stones is very popular right now. As a pick, but maybe people will have to think again if he's out of the Community Shield, for example.
I mean, that's another thing. I mean, if he's out for a while, to go back to Rico Lewis again seamlessly, and let's say, for example, Walker does end up leaving, that Rico Lewis can play in that Stones role.
He could.
So it's honestly, I'm so excited about this week. You know, all the stuff that's going to come out, and yeah, I'm really looking forward to this.
What are the odds of Edison being in your team?
Oh, I don't know. I flip flop. Because there's no point getting the clean sheet if they're not playing. And they are the best defence in Europe. Like, I think there's no doubt about that. So, high, I think. Because I'm not that hot on Onana, for example. So, I'd rather pay the 0.5 more if I was going to go there. I'd say 50-50. Like, I'm really sitting on the fence here. What about you?
Honestly, today I put him in my team and then I removed him. Because I have the same logic. When you see Stones not in the squad and then you think, for 0.5 more, I can get Edison and Shaw instead of Onana and Stones, and Shaw is still super attacking. So you still get the City clean sheets, but then some, you know, sense comes back into my head where even if Edison keeps two more clean sheets than Onana or Steele or, you know, Johnston, he could still have fewer points than them. So you still have to sort of think about, forget about City defense coverage. Edison is just on a soul basis, not as good on a points basis because he'll get no saves, no bonus. So just, yeah, I'm unlikely to do it.
He did make a lot more sense when City had the doubles. I know it didn't pay off, but that made, yeah, a lot more sense. So, yeah, that's why I'm 50-50. I think if I've got money left over, I'm more than happy to chuck him in.
Yeah.
For that extra point, 0.5. But most likely I'm going to go for a 4.5 keeper. And I'm so not against, to segue into Man United as well, not to keep picking on Onana, but I think I'd rather rotate goalkeepers, you know, with that extra 0.5.
I think Onana should do better than the 4.5s, in my opinion, because in the first 8 game weeks, again, if that's your wildcard horizon, there's 5 home games. And home form for Man United was very, very good. So I know there's some tougher games in that period, but 5 home games is decent. And then even if you don't believe in this, you know, bonus potential or whatever, I think there'll be some saves there. So I think he, for me, in the first 8 game weeks, he's as good as any 4 or better than any 4.5. But then if you have a longer term horizon and you want to have money left over for some transfers and you want to save the 0.5, that 0.5 can get you some extra points, then I think I can also understand 4.5.
I think there is something there in the bonus thing, because I mean, Baker 343, he put together, I mean, it was only one game, but he worked out what the bonus points would be in one of your friendlies, and he absolutely wiped the floor with Shaw. Again, it's a friendly, it's, you know, a small sample, etc. So I can see the appeal. I've pretty set my mind up. I'm not going to do it. It's going to be Edison or cheap, I think.
Do you know, this is where the fan in me also comes into it. Like, I absolutely cannot watch the Man United game knowing that their defense is like 90% EO or 80% EO, and I don't own them. Like, I just don't like it. So whenever a Man United player becomes popular, I convince myself, or if I think that if it's a good pick, then I just pick it. Because ultimately, we're football fans as well, right? So,
no, it's true.
I just want, and I, you know, we all say it, that we separated the FPL from our fandom, and it helps obviously if your team isn't in the Premier League. But to me, I'm happy to pay the 0.5 to enjoy the Man United games a little bit more.
I can understand that. I think sometimes the problem I have is because Man United fans can be quite vocal about, or any fans, about their own players. If I hear, say, a player's quite good and I hear this player's essential, like talking about Onana, for example, There's part of me that wants to think of the reasons he's not essential and be like a bit more level-headed about it. But then maybe I can go the whole other way, because it's like you're sort of being told what to do. And it's like, no, well, this isn't 100% correct. It's not as definitive as you say. But then teams like Man United, if you go against them, the EO goes so high. You can be really punished. So sometimes I wish I was a Man United fan. Well, you know, when like Bruno goes on a streak of scoring a penalty every week for a month.
It works both ways. I suffered with Shaw and Bruno for the last 12 game weeks last season. I think many people did, frankly. It wasn't all Man United fans. But sometimes it doesn't work and you know, it backfires. But that's the life of supporting your team and playing FPL. And you almost wish that they're not in the title race, or they're not as good a team from an FPL point of view, but the fan in you obviously want them to do really well.
Well, I've had very little exposure to supporting a team for FPL. I think I had it one season, maybe two. Right. No, I think it was only one. But yeah, so we're on Man United. You've had a lot of preseason games.
Yeah.
And you've still
and
got
there's
a couple
two more.
More.
And I'm very glad that I'm actually going to the Lens one, the one at Old Trafford on Saturday. I'm taking my son to Old Trafford for the first time. So looking forward to that. But it might also be Hoyland's debut, actually, because he's... I think they're saying that he's passed the medical and the contract's been signed, not officially, but through obviously Fabrizio. But in terms of our preseason, I think what I would say is they've tried Sancho at false nine, and we may see more of that, even though Hoyland's been signed, simply because Hoyland's not ready. I mean, he's going to start, I think, every other game or get a sub on 30 minutes, 40 minutes, maybe start and get 45 or 60 minutes. So I think they will take their time with Hoyland. What that means is that Sancho might start false nine. Rashford might start up top in some games. The other talking point used to be Mount versus Bruno. I think that's been put to bed quite convincingly. Mount's been the one who's been further back. Now, that doesn't mean Mount doesn't get forward, but I think Bruno clearly is doing what Bruno does, which is being more attacking. There was one game where Bruno played on the right. It didn't really work. So I would expect, you know, this to come back because he was trying Eriksen, or actually it was Menu, but then he got injured. Then Eriksen played there. They were trying Mount in the number 10 and Bruno Fernandes on the right. Now, that was a tough game. And so maybe that was just one of those things because that was Real Madrid. Whatever the case, I think Bruno's an excellent pick. And for me, I would even argue if Rashford plays number 9, then Bruno's a better pick because Rashford is not the best number 9. He's actually much better coming off the left like he does for England, like whenever he does for Man United. He's much, much better. He's not the best when he's leading the line and holding up the ball. He's rather a better runner. So I would say Bruno great, Rashford great, and everything else is fine. Shaw was very attacking as well, by the way. So people are convincing themselves that Onana is a better pick. That's simply because we don't have space for Shaw with all these other attacking fullbacks that we talked about, but Shaw is still a good pick.
Is Shaw ever going to play left centre-back this season? Or is it... Those days are behind him.
Well, two reasons. One, Martinez is now fit, so there's no need to. Martinez is a machine. He'll continue to play. And the second reason is actually end of the season, Lindelof played there and he did really well as well. So with Lindelof in the team, Maguire can play as backup to Varane, and Lindelof can play backup to Martinez. We have also signed Johnny Evans, actually, from Leicester. Not many people know. It's on a short-term deal,
but
he's also there. So there is quite a bit of backup.
How old is Johnny Evans now?
Like 37.
Okay, he's younger than me then. I'd have to check here.
Oh, he's no comment.
Is he 35?
Is he 35?
35. According to Wikipedia. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I didn't actually know that, but I mean, I can't really add much to what you've just said about Man United. You know, it's your team. I'm more than happy, despite what I've said about Onana, I'm dead set on having Bruno and Rashford. It was almost a Chilwell and James situation at first. I just couldn't decide between them. I think Bruno is edging it for me just because of the penalties. That's always one of the best tiebreakers. Well, he has the two tiebreakers. He's got the minutes and he's got the penalties. So, but I can't see a world I don't have both. I think if I did drop one for any reason, it would be Rashford. But I'd be nervous there. I'd be really nervous not having him.
He's a high ceiling player, and if he's high owned, he can ruin your early start. He won't ruin your season, but he can ruin your mentally. He could, you know, if you fall back very early, it's not great. So, and I see in the chat there's a Man United fan, Manchester United. He's saying Hoyland's done a full preseason. I agree, but I think even though he's fit, he's not just going to throw him in the deep end. He's a young player, so I think he'll get a slower start. Not put too much pressure on him. He's a big signing. Eventually, he'll take the number 9, but I don't think he's starting straight away.
Imagine he has a start like Martial. It was Martial who scored in his best the brace of
against
games.
Liverpool.
Yeah. Just imagine a start like that. Then we've got a Jesus replacement.
I mean, he's also, I mean, I expect him to be 7.5. So actually, it'd be a good price point.
Yeah. Oh, he's still not got, because of course he's not been priced yet, has he?
He's not official yet, yeah.
No. And then the final team. So we've gone over what we aim to do. We had a couple of people, time-wise, reminding us beforehand.
Have we? Okay.
I think we've got Arsenal to go. And I think Arsenal, that segues nicely into the big news that Jesus is injured. A player I don't think either of us are going to go without him. Game week one. Unless something like this happened.
Absolutely. I'm absolutely gutted because, you know, basically my differential from the template was triple Arsenal attack. And now that Jesus is out, you've basically been, you cannot get triple Arsenal because you can get maybe three midfielders, but you also want other midfielders. So you've technically been taken out. That triple attack isn't viable. Now, unless Nketiah becomes an option, now, we don't know this. I mean, we'll watch the Community Shield. Nketiah could play up top, and that's what he did in the friendly last night. But the problem is Trossard could play there. Havertz could play there. So even if Nketiah starts in the Community Shield, am I 100% that he's going to nail down his place and start the next 7-8 game weeks when Arsenal have an excellent run? No. So I'm going to hesitate on Nketiah, even if he starts the Community Shield. And so what this ripple effect of this is, you can't get triple Arsenal attack. You have to get a defender, or if you want to, because Gabriel is such great value. One slot in defense is now completely template, which is Gabriel. Second thing that's happened is most people have Saka already. If you want triple Arsenal, a second Arsenal mid has become template as well. Whether you go Martinelli or Odegaard, we're back to the old discussion. But so it's almost said, instead of being different in your Arsenal slots, you could go triple attack. You could go two midfielders and a defender. You could go attacker, midfielder, defender. Everyone will have the same three. That's why I'm really disappointed. I mean, what does that mean for your team on and on what's happened with Arsenal?
I mean, you've just said it. I mean, I've just realised we had very... Well, we didn't have very different. We both had Saka and we both had Jesus. Then I had Gabriel, you had Martinelli.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming you're going to get Gabriel and I'm going to get Martinelli. That would be a pretty... And we're going to have the same three, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, no, I agree with you there because I think they're the standout best picks to go for. I can understand people want to take a punt on Trossard or Nketiah. Actually, can I? I think I'd need some really compelling evidence. And I guess you can go through all the games last season when Nketiah was injured, when Jesus was injured, and piece together the most likely scenario. But it still feels like a huge risk because things can change. You know, it's a whole new season. I think Martinelli, I mean, you had him already. I think he was a safe enough pick anyway because he's got a high ceiling. His minutes are still going to be fairly good. They might be very, very good. So I think his value's just gone up from being pretty good anyway.
Yeah.
Gabriel does seem like a no-brainer at the back. I think we talked about him earlier. He had the highest XG for defenders. You know, he's up there with Shah. He was just behind him.
Yep.
So yeah, I hadn't thought about how it's going to make it boring, but maybe I'm thinking some people would try and be a bit more exciting or think they're going to be a bit more exciting. And then at the last minute, we're going to all end up on the same three.
Well, look, I mean, I did try an Nketiah draft today. So it's not that I'm ruling out Nketiah completely. Yep. Let's say he starts against City, scores a brace, right? What that means is we will overplay, obviously, that Nketiah is amazing. I think what it means for me is minutes. That if he's scoring well, looking good, and let's say Arsenal win against Man City. I'm just playing a scenario in my head. And Nketiah scored a brace. So in the two games where Jesus has been out, he started both of them up top. He scored in both of them. What it means is you can rely on him to start the next couple, maybe the next three, because he's done well in that position. So if you can have a structure where you have basically 12 good players and one of them is Nketiah, you can afford Nketiah losing his spot in a game and then it's not an emergency problem. So I did look at a structure where I had four good defenders, I had five good midfielders, and I had two attackers, Haaland and Nketiah. And I think that structure could work because now you have 12 good players. But of course, when Nketiah loses his spot or if he loses his spot, you're down to two Arsenal players and now you need to fix your team. It's not ideal, but I can see people punting if that happens.
Do you know what? I can see the crossover now with you advising me not to go for Rico Lewis. Going for Nketiah could be the same thing. You're basically blocking off a spot. I put on the screen the XGI non-penalty from last season for Arsenal players. And I mean, you can see Jesus and Nketiah, you know, if they have, you know, 90 minutes, they were, you know, the top two. Jesus, for people listening, 129. To every 129 minutes, he's getting an expected goal involvement. Nketiah was 133. Then it drops all the way down to Martinelli at 170. So you can see playing that position for Arsenal is good. But like you say, it's those minutes. And I don't think I'm prepared to risk it when Martinelli's so good. And then Saka's gone. His stock has gone sky high this week. You know, people are talking. Andy Martin's in the chat. He's talking about captaining him, for example.
Oh, he is. Andy Martin has switched to Analytics FC, has he?
I think so. Or he thinks he invented Analytics FC because he tweeted about it before.
I mean, in case he doesn't know, on certain models, Saka is higher than Haaland in Game Week 1 and Game Week 3, I think, right?
Yep.
So,
are you going to do it?
I can't do it. No chance. I mean, I have gone through the pain of Game Week 9 last year with Salah captaincy, and I'm not going to do it. I mean, not too early in the season. And the thing with Arsenal is there are still other teams. I don't see Saka as a talisman. I'm you know, he is on penalties. There is some doubt, though, because Havertz took a fantastic penalty last night, by the way. I don't know if you saw. Then Jorginho has been decent at penalties. Saka has missed a couple now. So I'm not taking the punt that Saka gets a penalty and he doesn't take it or he misses it or he's looking more peripheral and Martinelli gets the brace. Haaland is Haaland. I'm going with Haaland.
No, I can get that. I mean, say Saka wasn't on penalties. I'll still have him in my team. I think he's that good. We covered it on Scoutcast on Monday. Yeah. But I guess, yeah, I guess then it becomes the captaincy debate, because I think penalties are what puts him in, you know, or could put him in, the, you know, the elite tier, you know, along with like Salah, along with Haaland, along with Kane. I think you almost you have to have penalties to be in that tier.
I mean, his minutes are good as well. He'll play 99 minutes or 98 minutes now consistently. So, I think he's the standout pick. And I think if his ownership was going to be 70%, now it's going to be 90% or 85%, at least in the elite tier, maybe even higher. So I think that's a no-brainer. But captaincy, I'm skeptical. I wanted to address also another point. There's been this narrative that Martinelli is not that great when Jesus is out. So when he plays with Nketiah, I personally put zero value on that, because it's such a short, small sample size. We don't know who the opposition was, you know, how Martinelli was feeling at the time. Are you putting anything in that in terms of how he plays with Nketiah versus not with with Jesus?
So the stats I saw, and this wasn't me being biased, were that Saka was better. His output, I haven't looked at his underlying data, but I saw that his output was actually better when Jesus wasn't in the team. Does ring a bell. Like, it is a small sample, but it does ring a bell.
A brace in two games and his output becomes better. You know, it was like five or six games. But now you're with me, right? I mean, maybe the data shows it, but are we going to buy that narrative, or are we just going to ignore and get Martinelli anyway?
Yeah, I'll still go for Martinelli, because he's done it so consistently, you know, over a longer period of time. I really like Martinelli. I still regret selling him last season for Odegaard. I know there was logic. It made sense, but... He's just so good. I mean, I've just seen, again, to mention Andy Martin, he's mentioned he's got three Arsenal midfielders.
You could grow with that structure as well. I did think of that. But then you're basically sacrificing an Mbeumo, Eze, or a Mitoma, because then you have all it. Or you don't have Bruno Fernandes or Rashford. So I just don't like that sacrifice.
No, I agree. Because, now in the post-Jesus era, I want to have those two Arsenal mids. I want to have the two Man United mids. Can't afford Salah. So you're right. Yeah, then you've only really got that one spot.
I mean, you say Salah. I mean, if Nketiah becomes an option, now we're going to deep punt territory. If Nketiah becomes an option, that does free up money from your forward line. You could upgrade a Rashford to a Salah, you know, find a million more somewhere. So there could be a little bit of uptick in Salah's ownership if basically, you know, like we were saying in João Pedro's case, if he becomes a nailed option at Brighton, now we're not saying he is, that would mean Salah's ownership goes up because people can afford Salah because of this enabler. Nketiah could be that enabler as well.
Yeah, I think the way to get Salah in would be to go not massive at the back, but to spend money on, you know, four or five good defenders. Yeah, and just tank the third forward spot, get your second striker as cheap as possible. So yeah, I think you're right. Obviously someone like Carlton Morris is being taken away because they blank in game week 2, 5.5. But yeah, it would be the way to get Salah in would be, yes, second striker to have as cheap as possible, but still playing. So yeah, they're probably the kind of players we'd be looking at. But is there enough time before game week 1 to make that decision?
No, I think Liverpool's ownership is going to be low. It's very difficult. Nketiah could do anything in that, yet you wouldn't be certain. So it is, you're getting into deep punt territory, and I personally will unlikely to go there. And then, so what's going to happen is people will have a striker for a similar amount. So it could be Nkunku if he's fit. It could be Ollie Watkins. Obviously, in tonight's friendly, he missed a penalty, but then he scored a goal. Aston Villa are just a good team anyway. Even though the fixtures, I don't love Newcastle away, Chelsea away, Liverpool away in the first five. But look, Watkins is central to everything they do. So he's a decent, or I should say he's a good option. I would have definitely preferred Jesus if he was fit. I would maybe even prefer Nkunku because I don't like Watkins' first game, basically away to Newcastle. So I would just start with Nkunku, who plays Liverpool and then has a fantastic run after that, if he's fit. And so the implications to this Jesus injury is, again, we're getting narrowed down to second striker in Nkunku or Watkins. Your midfield is, I think, Bruno, Rashford, Martinelli, Saka, or Odegaard, Martinelli, Saka, and then a 6.5 mid. And then you have your 5 and 5.5 million defenders. So unfortunately, it's narrowed down the pool quite significantly.
The template's getting a lot stronger. And by stronger, boring. But I don't think it's something we should fight against. Like, I think I used to want to try and fight against it, but I guess we just got to embrace it. There's going to be some good opportunities to pivot, you know, in game weeks 2, 3, 4. Well, not necessarily game week two, but three and four look big. Game week five as well, we mentioned with the Spurs players. So maybe we're going to have a very, very template start. Maybe everyone's going to have the same 11 players.
I mean, let's see. It's, things can change in an instant. Like this Jesus injury has made it more concentrated. Other things could make it more diverse. If Kane leaves, Richarlison and Son become options. You know, if there's another injury or if in the City game, another player puts their hand up, let's say Foden does really well. Now suddenly you can't fit Martinelli. So it changes stuff. So we'll see. I mean, obviously new information will come, but every time there is new information, there is a convergence towards a set template. And look, I agree with you. It is what it is. I genuinely think that this year the gains will come between game week 9 and game week 30, because that's the period where there's no wildcard to build people out. I mean, most people would have played their wildcard, but then so people will drift in terms of, you know, where they go with their transfers post wildcard. So between wildcard 1 and wildcard 2 is going to be where all the gains are going to be made this season, at least in my view.
Yeah, that I mentioned the defender pod, but the wildcard windows. Was it called wildcard windows?
Wildcard
windows were really good as well. But you've just got me thinking, and we are running out of time, that, you know, obviously things could change. I mean, if Haaland gets injured.
Oh, man, that would be great. Sorry, not to wish injury on anyone.
Well, we'd all get Salah.
But there's no midfield spot.
Oh, of course. But there'd be no strikers.
There'd be no strikers. So we'd get Trent. I think we'd get Trent, or we'd get Salah and lose out on a Bruno and maybe get Shaw. But yeah, I mean, we don't need to speculate.
This is
really hypothetical. We'll speak next Thursday.
Well, yes, that's the big one. I could talk for another hour right now, but we said we'd keep it short so people can listen on their commute to work. And then
Indeed. I mean, we've got 625 people watching. If you can hit the like button, if you can subscribe to the channel, there's good content now pretty much every evening. We've got Scoutcast, we've got General's Orders, we've got Burning Questions, we've got Deadline Dilemmas, we've got that the Neil famous the press conference reaction. So lots to come. So if you can hit the subscribe button, that'd be really appreciated.
Yeah, there's lots of good stuff. And yeah, thanks everyone for all the really nice comments on the video last week. It's quite rare. I didn't see a single negative one, which was really nice. People were really glad to have you back, Praz.
And you.
And long me, but mainly you. Like I said, I love watching you on Scoutcast last year, and I'm enjoying these. I'm really looking forward to next week. But
likewise. We'll discuss our teams next week on where we are. It'll be the day before the deadline. So yeah, look forward to that.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be pretty much locked in, because obviously working all day Friday. I got scarred for making a late change last year by taking out Mitrovic. So I think I might be set on next pod. Although I'm sure you'll try and twist my arm on a couple of things.
Well, we'll see. When Pochettino says James is completely fit, I'll try to convince you.
Yeah. Well, if
James, are you not coming to Fest, by the way?
I might be. I am going to do my best.
Excellent.
Yeah. But thanks everyone for joining us. Nice speaking to you, Praz. And we'll be back next Thursday, 9 p.m. in the UK.
Bye.